It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 56 degrees under overcast skies. The humidity is 75% at the airport. They have 10 miles of visibility, and they are registering southeast winds at 12 miles per hour. The Weather Service is still calling for partly sunny skies today with a high near 61, those southeast winds around 10. Mostly clear overnight with a low around 50, southeast winds continuing at about 5 to 10, then turning to the west after midnight. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 66, west winds to 5, becoming completely calm. Coming up in the Midday Report, Bristol Bay fishing crews began protesting on Thursday, officially. Young burn survivors from Indiana are spending a week in Ketchikan as part of a traveling summer camp. And an insect infestation that has been defoliating thousands of acres in the Tongass National Forest appears to be abating.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. A prolonged heat dome is keeping up the extreme temperatures in the Southwest and is shifting eastward this week, turning up the heat on much of the rest of the U.S. At the same time, wildfires are breaking out in Arizona and Washington state, spurring evacuations. Climate change is not only intensifying heat waves and wildfires, flooding is getting worse too. NPR's Rebecca Hersher reports at the same time, people are increasingly moving to places in the U.S. most prone to flooding.
The places with the most flood risk are concentrated on the East and Gulf coasts. In 2021 and 2022, the places with the most flood risk gained more than 380,000 net residents, according to a new analysis by the real estate company Redfin. That's more than double the number of people who moved to flood-prone places the previous 2 years. The population swelled in coastal areas from Texas to Florida to North Carolina to Maryland. South Louisiana and the Florida Keys were exceptions. Both have lost population in recent years in the wake of major hurricanes. Migration into flood-prone areas is particularly notable because climate change is causing floods to get more frequent and severe due to heavy rain and rising seas. Rebecca Hersher, NPR News.
The White House is decrying the judicial reforms Israeli lawmakers passed today as unfortunate. The law strips the Supreme Court there of a key check on the government that Israelis have demonstrated against for months, and with today's vote, fiery protests are carrying on into the night. The BBC's Paul Adams reports from Jerusalem on what it means for the Prime Minister.
It is a symbolic start, a symbolic victory for Benjamin Netanyahu, because it just enables him to say to his supporters and to the parties that he is trying to keep around him in this rather shaky coalition that, yes, he is able to realize their aspirations. And so, for the time being, it shores up his authority.
That's the BBC's Paul Adams reporting. The State Department is still trying to find out what happened to a U.S. soldier who ran into North Korea last week. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports it comes as Pyongyang keeps test-firing missiles.
State Department spokesman Matthew Miller says the Biden administration has been using all of its channels to North Korea to request information about Travis King, the U.S. private who was last seen leaving a tour group at the demilitarized zone and running into North Korea.
We have made outreach to North Korea to let them know that we wanted to ascertain the whereabouts of Private King. We wanted information about his safety, but we have not received any response from them at all.
Miller is also condemning North Korea for recent missile tests, which he says violate multiple UN Security Council resolutions. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Bristol Bay fishing crews, outraged with this year's base price, protested in the Naknek River entrance on Thursday. KDLG reporters were on the water moving between protesting crews who are calling on Alaskan processors to reconsider their historic low base price and bring more price transparency to the fishery. KDLG's Jesse Sheldon reports.
By 9 a.m., over 100 boats are anchored in the Naknek River entrance, some after a night of fishing. Ivan Basarjan and the crew of the fishing vessel Top Notch are one of them, here to join the demonstration against this year's low price. He's fished in Bristol Bay since the late 1980s and builds fishing boats in the off-season. Standing in the wheelhouse of a boat he built, he says this year's low price hits hard.
I'm going to pay my workers, I'm going to pay my bills. As far as living expense, I haven't decided yet. So this 50 cents that I get when I get home is going to be a wash. You know, I'm not going to have anything in the bank sitting.
Organizers of the protest are calling on processors to reconsider and improve the base price this season from 50 cents per pound, less than half of last year's price. Without change, many fishermen say it's unsuitable for the industry, and some say they will go home in debt. Basarjan says he's out on the water today because he fears accepting this year's low base price will set a precedent.
If they know we can fish for 50 cents, we're going to get paid 30 cents next year. They'll know that, and we'll go. So if that's the case, then, you know, nobody's doing anything, and it will happen if we don't do anything. No, like today, this is just a peaceful protest. You know, we're not trying to block anybody or anything. You know, we're just trying to show the world that we're hurting and we need some help.
Basarjan says processors are claiming they are struggling financially too, but he hasn't seen that.
After a record fish catch last year and processors complaining that they're losing a lot of money, I see processors expanding. I see them buying other companies out. If you look at the scenario, you know, it kind of seems like, you know, they're putting a burden on us and they're adding up, you know, their profits and expanding their operations.
Trident Seafoods was the first to post that base price on Sunday with some handling incentives. North Pacific Seafoods announced the same a few days later, along with Peter Pan Seafoods, who is also offering a 20-cent bonus for late season fishing beyond July 18th. Organizers are also calling for processors to resume posting a base price ahead of the season. In recent years, Peter Pan Seafoods posted a price in mid-June, which was welcomed by fishermen. This year, processors did not release a price in Bristol Bay before fishing started. Fran Call, a longtime captain, says with prior knowledge of the low price, fishermen may have planned differently.
It was very interesting that a price came out pretty much at the end of the season. You know, they had all our fish, right? The fish had been caught, and then Trident posts 50 cents a pound.
Shane Blau has been fishing in Alaska for 35 years. He fishes for Trident and helped organize this protest, prompted by Trident's price announcement letter to the fleet. His children crew on his boat in the summers, but he has discouraged them from buying into the fishery.
You know, the last thing you want is your children to get strapped to hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt and then have the rug pulled out from under them. And that's what's going on. I didn't think it would happen quite this way, quite this fast, but it has.
Adjusted for inflation, this year's base price is the lowest recorded price in nearly 40 years, since 1984. But Blau says he's seen the quality of the fish sold to processors improve over that time. That's due to fishermen's investments in equipment and labor, according to Blau, but it's not reflected in prices offered by the processors.
We've been asked to make expensive capital improvements. A regular RSW system for somebody putting their boats probably in the $75,000 to $100,000 range. We hire an extra deckhand so we can bleed the fish. They have quality control people on every tender going, you know, your fish is good, your fish is bad, you need to do better.
Blau says fishermen bear the cost of these improvements but don't benefit from the resulting revenue.
And what do we get in return? We get half the price. And in my opinion, the processors need to do better. We've been in this status quo situation my entire career. I cannot believe I've been fishing 35 years and I'm fishing for less base price than I did when I was in my teenage years.
Kelly Steer on the fishing vessel Honey Badger says processors are taking advantage of fishermen, knowing they have few choices for buyers in the region.
We're out here, and the processors know that they have us. And it does take a lot of infrastructure, and they do have their expenses on their side of things, but I think they've taken advantage of us because they know they have us backed into a corner.
Anna Mounsey is a skipper on the fishing vessel Siren. She says younger members of the fleet, like herself, are questioning if this industry is worth buying into.
As a new fisherman, new skipper, just trying to make it in this fishery, just starting out, just the unsustainability with overhead and the price fluctuations, just seeing if it's even worth it with just how much it fluctuates, not being able to count on making boat payments and all the other expenses that come with just starting out, being young and watching this graying fleet leave, what hope do us young fishermen have?
KDLG made repeated email and phone call requests for comment with the largest processors, Trident Seafoods, OBI Seafoods, North Pacific Seafoods, Silver Bay Seafoods, and Peter Pan Seafoods, which have not been returned. Some fishing crews heard the news and promptly ended their season. Others continued fishing, ending an otherwise strong season with estimated harvests of over 36 million fish to date. Co-reported with Christina McDermott, Corinne Smith, and Jack Darrell, in Naknek, I'm Jesse Sheldon.
An insect infestation responsible for defoliating thousands of acres of the Tongass National Forest is abating. Scientists with the Forest Service believe that the black-headed budworm, whose numbers surged over the past 3 years, is now in decline. And while it's not clear how much lasting damage was done by the insect, there's a good chance that some parts of the forest may emerge from the infestation better off. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
I caught up with Gordy Williams by cell phone while he was riding the state ferry Lakanti from his home on Killisnoo Island in Angoon to Juneau in mid-July. It was a perfect day for a cruise up the Inside Passage and a perfect day to see the widespread damage caused by the black-headed budworm.
You know, I'm looking at Chichagof and Baranof. There are some pretty big impacts on the east side of these islands.
Those impacts are acre upon acre of defoliated hemlock trees, wide swaths of brown striping the otherwise endless green of southeast Alaska. The trees' needles consumed by tiny, voracious caterpillars who are fueling their eventual transformation into the budworm moth. Williams worked for years in the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He understands that budworm and its partner in crime, the hemlock sawfly, have a role in the forest, but this latest event he considers extreme. The Forest Service estimates 685,000 acres were defoliated by insects in the last 3 years.
It's a natural cycle, but when it does get ramped up like this, it does have a pretty significant effect on the ecosystem. So what our curiosity is at this point and our concern is, what are the impacts of this radically thinned out forest canopy in so many areas? You know, that's what provides winter cover for deer and other animals, and is it going to impact stream temperatures and that kind of things?
This part of Chatham Strait is notorious for winter storms, huge sou'easters that blow right up the channel between Admiralty and Baranof Islands and can make this ordinarily pleasant ferry ride a bit of a stomach churner. Hemlock sawfly stressed these trees in 2018 and 2019. The black-headed budworm infestation followed in 2020. Forest Service entomologist Liz Graham described it as a 1-2 punch to the forest, putting it on the ropes. The weather may have finished the job.
It definitely seems to be on some more extreme sites, too, the ones that are really heavily exposed. And so I do think that it's a little bit more like compounding impacts where there was heavy defoliation and then maybe on top of that, a big windstorm or ice storm, and that really kind of stripped the last of it. And so I do think that that's why we have seen some of those areas with really more dense mortality, that it's there's been more than one event there.
Graham said that depending on the area, up to half of the hemlock trees may have died. Although this sounds like a high toll, Graham's colleague, silviculturist Molly Simonson, says on a forest-wide scale, the damage is limited. Most areas are unaffected, and some forest die-off is not necessarily a bad thing.
You know, trees do die, whether it's clusters of them, you know, during a particular event, or whether it's just individually over the course of that forest's development. But, you know, it contributes to nutrient cycling within the ecosystem, and there's always going to be other trees in the understory waiting to take over that space. There's regeneration underneath those dominant trees that are just waiting to take over, and they'll capitalize on that.
The last major black-headed budworm infestation in the Tongass was in the 1950s, and good data are hard to come by. Liz Graham says tree ring studies could help her identify the timing of the budworm cycle, but humans are throwing new variables in the mix. Climate change, or specifically the number of frost-free days, could play a role in outbreaks. Warmer weather can also disadvantage budworms.
The budworm populations actually extend all throughout the Pacific Northwest. And so the outbreaks that we've been experiencing here have really just been happening in Southeast Alaska and haven't extended into BC. And so some of the research we've been looking at, it might be actually too warm down there. So it could be that we're in this perfect little climate window right now for budworm outbreaks.
Although the outbreak in Southeast Alaska is subsiding, there are some areas where budworms are peaking, notably Juneau and Haines. Picture a slow-moving budworm tsunami that began on Prince of Wales Island and traveled north. Defoliation is not certain death, however. Trees that were stripped near Gordy Williams' home on Killisnoo Island are sending out new buds this year, as are many along the route of the Lakanti as it steams up Chatham Strait.
We'll just have to see how many of those trees can come back and how long it takes.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Young burn survivors from Indiana are spending over a week in Ketchikan as part of a traveling summer camp. The Hoosier Burn Camp takes participants to different places each summer. But it's the first time the group has traveled to Alaska or even boarded a plane together. As Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, the trip has been an experience of a lifetime for some of the campers.
The campers range in age from 15 to 20, a little older than the camp's usual traveling groups. This way, they can do more stuff in Alaska, like fishing for salmon.
Fishing was great. I just love fishing, and it's just exciting.
That's Jace. I caught up with him and others on a call during one of their breaks. The camp asked me to only use the teens' first names. Some of them have had dozens of reconstructive surgeries, and the camp gives them an opportunity to just be a tourist and step away from the stress.
My first salmon I ever caught in my life was the biggest of the day.
Austin was the very last camper to hook a fish on their boating trip south of town. He had doubts it would even happen.
I was basically speechless once I caught it. I was just so happy, and that meant the world to me because I didn't expect to catch a salmon that big, and I did it, so I've been pretty happy since then.
The group of mostly teenagers also walked through old-growth forests, rode e-bikes around town, and took sightseeing flights. Flying was one of Jace's favorite activities.
I just thought it'd always be cool to go on a float plane, and then we actually did. And landed on a lake out there, saw a whole bunch of mountains. It was really cool. It looked beautiful out there.
There's been sea kayaking and beach walking, where they saw a bear and seals. Austin likes some of the smaller creatures, too.
We seen a sea cucumbers. We seen that red spiky thing. Do you remember the name of that, Abby?
Anemone.
Oh,
the urchins.
Yeah.
The urchins, yes. Yeah.
That thing was really, really cool. I didn't even know they existed.
Hoosier Burn Camp was started by the Indiana State Fire Marshal and a children's hospital about 25 years ago. Its programs help kids rehabilitate physically and mentally from their burns. Mark Koopman is the executive director and is traveling with the group.
In some instances, we work with children that have had 40, 50, 60 reconstructive surgeries before they turn 18.
He says that changes the way they see the world and how they experience summer camps.
the physical trauma associated with that is exponentially difficult. It's hard to wrap into words. But then when you talk about the psychological trauma associated with burn injury, that's a whole other thing.
But he says sometimes the kids look forward to the surgeries too, when they help bring their bodies to their full potential, making trips like this one to Alaska possible. Koopman says their trip relied heavily on local donations like housing in a church and discounts on adventures. Ketchikan's fire chief, Rick Hines, helped make connections. He hails from Indianapolis and fought fires there for decades before retiring and moving to Ketchikan. He says Ketchikan generously welcomed the campers.
Everybody that we reached out to through the Hoosier Burn Camp was like, yep, yep, tip my guides. You can go on this excursion for free. Or, you know what? I won't do any charters to stay, and I'll take your folks out on my boat. Or I'm going to charge you the minimum I can to operate or cycle my plane, you know, for three trips.
Hines says the Hoosier Burn Camp is well known in Indiana. He relates to the campers in more ways than one. He's also a survivor. He burned his right arm on the job.
The one takeaway really is the amount of pain that these kids have endured, because there's no amount of pain medicine that can take away the physical pain they endure, you know, let alone the mental pain.
So when the campers had the chance to take a dip in the cold salt water on a cloudy day and go all the way under, many, like Austin, said yes.
We're here to have fun, make great memories. And that right there, that is definitely a great memory that I will never forget on this trip, never forget in my lifetime.
Campers not only hooked salmon on the trip, but several got hooked on Alaska and say they most definitely will be coming back. Reporting for Coast Alaska in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Support for KMXT comes from GCI. GCI is a participant in the Affordable Connectivity Program, providing qualifying Alaska households entry-level broadband internet. More information at gci.com/acp.
Another shot to avert a crippling UPS strike. I'm Novosafo with the Marketplace Minute. The Teamsters Union is scheduled to meet again with representatives of the shipping giant tomorrow, the first meeting since labor talks broke down 3 weeks ago. The union wants better pay and working conditions. The current labor contract expires at the end of the month. It's a crucial week for the Federal Reserve. The central bank is expected to raise interest rates Wednesday by a quarter point, the 11th hike since March of last year and possibly the last of this cycle. It's also a big week for earnings. A third of all S&P 500 companies will report second quarter results this week. So far, quarterly reports have shown earnings down by the largest amount since the second quarter of 2020. I'm Novosafo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by KeyBank. Learn more at key.com/tech trends.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 24th day of July, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 5:48. It will set again at 10:42. That will give us 16 hours and 54 minutes of daylight, a loss of 3 minutes and 48 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 81 degrees. That was set in 1967. And our record low temperature was 42, set in 1937. Currently 56 under overcast skies. Out at the airport, they are showing southeast winds at 12 miles per hour, and they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service continues to call for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day. High near 61, southeast winds to 10. And mostly clear overnight with a low around 50, southeast winds to 10, becoming southwest after midnight. And sunny skies tomorrow too with a high near 66. The winds are expected to turn to the west to 5 and then become completely calm. Well, let's hear our brand new announcement from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Update Number 3, date issue 10 a.m. on July 24th. The following areas will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Monday, July 24th. The Northwest Kodiak District, except for the Uyak Bay, Zacher Bay, and Inner Uganic Bay sections, remain closed. The Northeast Kodiak District, except for the Buskin River section, remains closed. The Eastside Kodiak District, except for Passaic Bay, remains closed. The Humpy Deadman section of the Allatak District and the Afognak District, including the Duck Bay, Iyuit Bay, Inner Katoy Bay, and Outer Katoy Bay sections of the Afognak District. Closed waters are reduced to the stream terminus of Sultry Creek, stream number 259415, until 9 p.m. Monday, July 24th. As previously announced, the Spearton Bay Special Harvest Area remains open until further notice, and until further notice within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak District south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 20 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse-seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Concerning the North Shelikof Strait fishery, the seaward zones of the Alinchak, Katmai, Dakovac Bay, Outer Kukak Bay, Hallow Bay, and Big River sections of the mainland district and the seaward zones of the southwest Afognak, northwest Afognak, and Shuyak Island sections of the Afognak district remain closed. Short notice, in-period closures may occur for seine fisheries in the seaward zones of the Cape Big Back section as designated in the North Shelikof Strait Sockeye Salmon Management Plan. Closure announcements may occur at 8:30 a.m., 10 a.m., noon, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., or 8 p.m. on VHF Channel 6. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart in detail in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations, and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour cordophone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And mariners, here is your weather on the water. Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles, southeast 15 today and tonight, the seas to 4 feet, southwest 15 tomorrow with 2-foot seas, coming up to 3 feet tomorrow night. Over in the Shelikof Strait, variable 10 tonight, becoming southwest 15 after midnight, 1-foot seas, building to 3 feet after midnight tonight. For tomorrow on our west side, southwest 15 and seas to 4 feet. For Tuesday night, southwest 20 and 5-foot seas, building to 6 feet on Wednesday. We are essentially at low tide. The tide will be completely out here on the east side at 12:34, just a little under 10 minutes. That will be a 1-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 7:09 p.m. of 7.3 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 1:03 this afternoon and be 1.9 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 7:37 of 12.3 feet. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On Monday, July 24th, the Fire Protection Area No. 1 Board will be having its regular meeting in the Bayside Fire Station at 6 p.m. On Tuesday, July 25th, the Parks and Recreation regular meeting will be held at the Borough Conference Room at 2:30 p.m. And on Thursday, July 27th, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. And remember, assembly meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. Subscribe to get live stream notifications. Nominating petitions for 1 2-year city mayor seat and 2 3-year city council seats are available in the city clerk's office. For additional information, call the Kodiak City Clerk at 907-486-8636. Also, tomorrow, the city council will be having a work session, and on Thursday, it will be holding its regular meeting. Both of those meetings will happen at 7:30 p.m. and be held in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. The agendas as well as the live streaming link is available at the City of Kodiak website. For more information, call the city clerk at 907-486-8636. Senior citizens of Kodiak will be holding their regular board meeting on Friday at 1 p.m. in the center's multipurpose room. The meeting is open to the public. For more information, call the Senior Center at 907-486-6181. Don't forget Saturdays are when the library has its beehive checks. Children under 5 must watch from inside, and children under 13 must be supervised by a parent or guardian. They happen at 10:15 a.m. Call the library at 486-8686 to sign up for your spot. And the Kodiak Island Borough School District's Summer Food Service Program is continuing. That will be going through August 17th, Mondays through Thursdays. Breakfast is served at 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., lunch from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., and both are in the high school commons. They're absolutely fresh and free for all kids ages 18 and under. If you need more information, call 907-486-7448.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181. Fax us at 486-2733 or email psa@kmxt.org.